Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Get Out of Jail Free Card Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 24th, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decisions in three honest services fraud cases, Gilling v. United States, Black v. United States, and Wayrock v. United States. The issues in these cases concerned the mail and wire fraud statutes, which makes it a federal crime to use mail or wires in furtherance of any scheme or artifice to defraud. The cases also concern the Honest Services Fraud Statute, 18 U.S.C. Section 1346, which reads as follows. For the purpose of this chapter, the term scheme or artifice to defraud includes a scheme or artifice to deprive another of the intangible right of honest services. To discuss the decisions, we have John Hsu, who is an attorney at Stradling, Yaka, Carlson, and Routh. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Hsu.
Thanks, Barrett, and welcome, folks, to SCOTUSCast, the Get Out of Jail Free Card Edition. Ever since Congress passed the Honest Services Fraud Law in 1988, federal prosecutors love charging white-collar defendants with the law because it was so vague that they could use it in almost any circumstance that they saw fit. The Supreme Court's honest services fraud decisions, however, now limit its application to situations where prosecutors put forth evidence that the defendant accepted bribery or kickbacks. The court's decisions reach back to its prior jurisprudence in McNally v. United States, 483 U.S. 350, 1987, where the court limited the scope of the mail and wire fraud statutes to protecting tangible property rights, including money. Congress passed the Honest Services Fraud Law in 1988 in response to McNally. Over the years, the lower courts have struggled to define just what kind of wrongdoing would fit within that concept. For example, if a mayor of a city calls a local restaurant and asks for the best table on a busy Saturday night and doesn't tell his voters about it, and the restaurant gives it to him, is that a violation of honest services fraud? Now, in essence, the court has made it clear that unseemly, unethical, or even tortious behavior is not necessarily criminal behavior, and that Congress must do a better job in writing its statutes. Let's take each of these three cases in turn. While Justice Ginsburg either authored or read the majority opinions in all three cases, and all of them dealt with the constitutionality of honest services fraud, they do so under slightly different circumstances. First up is the Skilling case, which is about former Enron CEO Jeff Skilling. Enron is the former energy and energy trading company whose downfall rattled the entire economy and gave us what's now known as Sarbanes-Oxley. A Texas federal jury convicted Skilling of conspiracy to commit fraud, and that charge was based on prosecutors' claim that Skilling had denied his company honest services. He was also convicted of 12 counts of securities fraud, 5 counts of making false statements to accountants, and 1 count of insider trading. The jury found him not guilty on 9 other counts of insider trading. The Fifth Circuit upheld the convictions and also rejected Skilling's claim that the incredible amount of negative pretrial publicity prevented him from getting a fair trial in Houston, where Enron was based. The court analyzed 2 basic questions. First, whether the honest services fraud statute was unconstitutionally vague, and second, whether Skilling suffered sufficient negative pretrial publicity such that his conviction should be invalid. With respect to honest services fraud, Justice Ginsburg, along with Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Alito, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Stevens, all voted to, in the court's words, construe, not condemn, Congress's enactments, and thus interpreted the law instead of striking it down, to criminalize bribes and kickbacks and nothing more. The majority opinion also flatly rejected the government's arguments that the law should be available for prosecuting self-dealing, which is when a defendant does something for strictly his personal gain without proper disclosure, and for prosecuting conflicts of interest. While Justice Ginsburg's opinion left open the option for Congress to draft a statute criminalizing self-dealing, it also warned that Congress should do so with, quote, particular care, unquote, not to exceed constitutional bounds. Justice Scalia wrote a separate opinion, with Justices Kennedy and Thomas joining, stating that he would strike the law entirely because it was so vague. Justice Scalia felt that the majority basically invented a new law and pointed out that none of the lower courts' honest services fraud cases were ever limited to bribery and kickbacks. With respect to Skilling's claim of an unfair trial, Skilling claimed that the negative publicity and atmosphere in Houston entitled him to a, quote, presumption of prejudice, unquote, such that the trial judge should have changed the venue, and that the jury selection process resulted in, quote, actual prejudice, unquote, because the jury was not impartial. Justice Ginsburg's majority opinion rejected Skilling's arguments and found that Skilling suffered no actual prejudice at trial, and that the presumption of prejudice from the pretrial publicity is to be reserved only for the extreme case. Chief Justice Roberts, along with Justices Alito, Kennedy, Scalia, and Thomas, joined this part of the opinion. Justice Alito wrote separately on this issue to emphasize that he would strike a jury verdict as unfair only if there were actual proof that a biased juror was seated at trial. Justice Sotomayor dissented sharply from this portion of Justice Ginsburg's majority opinion, with Justices Breyer and Stevens joining. Next up is the Black case. Conrad Black was the CEO of Hollinger International, a major newspaper publishing company. An Illinois federal jury convicted Black and other Hollinger senior executives of mail and wire fraud under the Honest Services Fraud Statute. The government claimed that they had paid themselves $5.5 million in fees without informing the company's audit committee or the company's board of directors. At trial, the judge instructed the jury that it could find the defendants guilty if it decided that they had schemed to deprive Hollinger and its shareholders of their intangible right to the honest services of the corporate officers, directors, or controlling shareholders of Hollinger, and if the objective of the scheme was private gain, or if they violated their duty of loyalty to the company. On appeal, the defendants explained that while their objective was in fact private gain, the compensation was crafted in order to avoid paying taxes to the Canadian government and not defraud the company, and therefore did not violate the law. Well, the Seventh Circuit upheld the convictions. The Supreme Court analyzed two questions in the Black case. First, whether honest services fraud applied to private individuals whose alleged scheme to defraud did not harm the private party to whom they owed those honest services. And two, whether a court of appeals can avoid reviewing a prejudicial jury instruction by retroactively imposing a verdict preservation requirement that is not found in the federal rule. Justice Ginsburg's majority opinion, referring to her Skilling opinion, said that Black's case also, quote, did not involve any bribes or kickbacks, unquote, so therefore the judge's jury instructions were invalid. Chief Justice Roberts, along with Justices Stevens, Breyer, Alito, and Sotomayor, joined the opinion. The court also held that the executive's lawyer had properly objected to that jury instruction, so the defendants could challenge that on appeal, even though they had resisted the use of a clarifying verdict form that could have indicated just what part of the verdict on fraud was based on the denial of honest services. Justice Scalia, joined by Justice Thomas, concurred in part and concurred in the judgment. He disagreed with the court's use of advisory committee notes in rendering its decisions and felt that the trial judge should not have issued the honest services fraud jury instruction at all. Justice Kennedy concurred in part and concurred in the judgment because he again believed that the honest services fraud statute should be struck entirely because of its unconstitutional vagueness. The last in this trio of cases is the Weirock case. The government charged former Alaska Representative Bruce Weirock with, among other things, honest services fraud because he allegedly voted in favor of tax measures which helped an Alaska oil company, Vico Corp., for which Weirock wanted to work in the future, and because Weirock did not disclose this to the voters. The full trial has not yet occurred because Weirock claimed that he could not be charged with honest services fraud because the prosecutors had not proven that he violated Alaska's state disclosure law. The Ninth Circuit agreed with the government. The question the Supreme Court analyzed was whether the government must prove that a state official violated a state law imposing a duty of disclosure in order to convict him or her of mail fraud and honest services fraud through the non-disclosure of material information. The court, in a very short per curiam opinion, which Justice Ginsburg read from the bench, vacated the judgment and remanded the case to the Ninth Circuit in light of the Skilling decision. Now, it's important to note that none of these three defendants actually got get-out-of-jail-free cards. Instead, the lower courts are to consider whether there was any harmless error and whether any of the evidence or claims regarding honest services fraud spilled over and tainted other convictions, such as Conrad Black's obstruction of justice conviction for destroying records. Harmless error is when a trial judge's ruling, although mistaken, does not meet the burden for the losing party to reverse the decision on appeal or warrant a new trial. For example, Federal Rule of Evidence 103, subsection A, states that, quote, error may not be predicated upon a ruling which admits or excludes evidence unless a substantial right of the party is affected, unquote. The impact of these three honest services fraud cases is significant. Besides limiting the Justice Department's future ability to prosecute white-collar criminals, the cases also affect other crimes which sometimes use honest services fraud, such as the RICO statute. RICO, of course, stands for Racketeer, Influenced, and Corrupt Organizations Act, and it was initially intended to prosecute the mafia and other organized crime entities. However, over time, the government has applied it in ever-widening circumstances. Furthermore, in light of the Skilling decision, the court has made it far harder for defense attorneys in high-profile criminal cases to try to undo guilty verdicts that were reached in a community where there were highly inflammatory publicity and detectable local hostility. And so, folks, that's a wrap-up of the trio of honest services fraud cases. Thanks very much for tuning in. We hope that you've enjoyed today's podcast and look forward to having you join us for more exciting U.S. Supreme Court analysis. I'm John Hsu, signing off for now. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.